Yeah, I really think that music is magic. Like, there's definitely something, and I don't know if it's with the singing. I mean, singing is also, it's like I feel like it's a meditation.
Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters. Franklin Public Radio, available anywhere, anytime on the internet, WFPR.FM. We're in our glorious studio today with Kimberly O'Brien. Kimberly, thanks for coming in.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
This is going to be fun.
Yes,
I know a little bit about you, but I think there's some stories behind that. So why don't we just start and say, like, who's Kimberly? Who's Steve talking with? So just give us a little bit of your, how did you end up here in Franklin doing stuff? I know at the senior center,
yep.
You do some neuroscience, musician, you got a bunch of things going on.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. I lucked out moving to Franklin, actually. I didn't really realize, like, what a lovely place it was. When I was looking with my realtor, this is about 4 years ago, and looking at different houses, I knew I wanted a place with a barn. I knew I wanted a little bit of land.
Mm-hmm.
I love gardening. And the moment that I saw my house and it was raining, and I knew immediately that I loved it.
Uh-oh.
And walked through it and just loved it.
You got hooked already.
I was hooked already. I had no idea. And then within a week of buying the house, realized that Delcarte, you know, the pond,
yes.
Right, and I have a
recreation
dog.
Recreation area. It's
gorgeous
space.
Pond right down the street. The airport conservation a mile from my house.
Okay. Yeah.
So for me, like, natural places, walking my dog.
Mm-hmm.
I think I went to the farmer's market the first week.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, oh my gosh. It
That's
was
a fun
such,
place.
Oh my gosh. I had no idea. Because I was living in a very urban place.
Okay.
And it was just this lovely, green,
yes.
kind
yes.
place
yep.
to, and I had no idea other than I loved my house. So I was very happy to find Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
and felt very lucky to be here.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, because certainly we've been here going on 30 years.
That's
Where
amazing.
Did the time go?
Yeah, right?
Daughters are grown, out
oh.
of the house. One, fortunately, is in the neighborhood, so we
nice.
Get to see our grandkids, which
oh,
they're
nice.
That's precious.
I love that.
And then I get to spend a lot of time at the senior center, and that's one of the places we've met.
Yeah. No, that's so fun. We started the brain talks. I think it's been 2 years now.
Mm-hmm.
So monthly talks, and I have to tell you, like, they are the most amazing students. And I think 2 years ago they were a little more timid,
mm-hmm.
and and we really wanted to do topics that they were interested in,
sure.
which is a lot about
yeah.
brain boosting memory and brain boosting. Healthy aging,
mm-hmm.
and then we did the neuroscience of prejudice, which was a little more intense, and then
right.
we did mental health and mental illness,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they're asked about their kids a lot and asked about their grandkids. And then they were really interested and asked a lot of good questions, but now when I do talks, I can't get through the third slide. They're just, I think they know me well enough that they want to talk about epigenetics.
They're comfortable and you've gotten used
yeah.
to giving them the answers to the questions they're
yeah.
asking.
And I love that.
Yeah.
So they're very comfortable now so that we can immediately get into other topics.
Sure.
So yeah, so they're very interested in neuroplasticity and epigenetics and the free will debate. So
mm-hmm.
even my doctoral students don't necessarily approach me that way. They're just, you know, they're a little more like, Dr. O'Brien, can we? So the seniors are, they're not like that. They're very like, let's debate about free will. And I'm like, okay, I'm not ready for this, but I'll get
right.
ready.
Right.
So yeah, no, they're the best students. They ask the best questions.
Mm-hmm.
So no, it's really fun.
Yeah, I go there monthly as well for a Mike Franklin Q&A. So if you've got a Franklin question, I'll attempt to answer it
awesome.
From my reporting experiences. I'll be in you know, between 80 and 100 meetings a year. So
oh, that's
I
great.
Have a unique role to at least say, well, yes, this person said this, this meeting said that, and oh, by the way, they actually connected to this one. So
yeah. That's a great resource for them.
Yeah, because and I learned, probably like you, I learned as much from them in terms of the questions they ask as to what they're hearing, what's out on the street, what's going on, as, you know, my answers to them will help clarify, hopefully, what this is the valid info. This is what it is. It's no, it's not that. That's not true.
right. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And there's a lot of misinformation, right? And I think, you know, knowing what I know about bias is that, you know, oftentimes older adults are seen as like their life is over and they're and I very much see them as experts. These are people who have been educators and engineers and so I very much learn from them and I very much see them as experts.
Sure. Yeah, there's two things coming out of that clearly. And I think one of the sessions was, you know, it's out there that, you know, once you're at a certain age, you know, you're not learning anymore, but physiologically, that's not true.
It's not true. Yeah. Yeah. We used to think that, well, a couple of different things, right? So don't get me started. So we used to think that the brain was fully developed by the time that you're 18, right? In terms of the myelination, right? So the link from the amygdala to the prefrontal cortex, right? So the emotion center to the good decision making. And now we know that that process is not done until you're about 25.
Right.
Which is amazing.
Right. So teenagers, clearly that's where they're at risk behavior because they really haven't got a formed brain until later.
At least 25. And then the idea about neuroplasticity, we used to think was done by the time you're about 40. Like you're done making new neurons. And that is not true. So we see neurogenesis later into life, throughout the lifespan, which is amazing. So,
Yeah. Because I've also talked with some artists, and one also is a Berkeley professor, and she does ear training, which would have some practical applications because to a certain extent, because I'm at all these meetings, I'm training my ears to listen as to what's going on and then translating into the notes, whereas her ear training is really in the music world so that they can listen to a piece of music and know the scales and be able to transcribe that.
Sure.
That's another whole... I'm not musically inclined. I don't know what a flat versus a major is or whatever.
Right. No, those processes are magical, right? When you think about the transduction of electrical energy or the biochemistry, I mean, it's amazing to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think one of the key pieces, and you probably can confirm it, the wiring actually helps more when you're writing physically as opposed to typing?
Yeah, right? Isn't that interesting? So there's a lot of evidence of that it takes the information into long-term storage easier when you're actually using handwriting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to reincorporate some handwriting back into my work routine because I'm doing, and primarily out of COVID, I'm doing it on my phone because it's quieter.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm recording, especially when I was during COVID, I would have to record. So I needed a quiet room and I couldn't use the keyboard because you would hear the click clacks.
Right. Yeah.
But on the phone, I could turn off the sensing
and
do a quiet text that way. But that doesn't help the wiring.
Right.
So
it's amazing.
I need to figure that out.
Yeah. I think there's something about the motor cortex. There's some attachment to the motor cortex when you're using your hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. It helps the wiring, which, as you've reinforced, even as old as we get, we're still as young as we feel. And we should continue to learn to help build those wires because the capability is there.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, no matter what we do in terms of brain health, we see that the things that work are all the same. Contralateral movement, right? So hand over hand, because, you know, we have two hemispheres. Most of us have two hemispheres.
Left side, right side, but you got to cross them.
You have to cross them, right? Which is why we walk the way that we do, right? Mm-hmm. Hopefully.
One leg forward, the other leg.
Yep. So contralateral movement, any kind of exercise, it doesn't matter what you do, exercise.
Whether walking or just getting up out of the chair to go to the
floor. Yep. And multi-plane, right? So instead of not just walking, but thinking about twisting, So doing movements.
Okay, side-to-side movements or whatever. Yep.
So gardening is the perfect thing to think about in terms of that kind of movement. That is, you're moving in different planes. You're going up and down,
you're reaching,
side-to-side,
bending, stretching, pulling, maybe a little tension there.
Yep. Respiration. Mm-hmm. So these are things that are so simple, and we know that they work for almost everything.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Definitely. And then you do some music.
Yeah.
Which and not is just some music.
Some music.
Jazz.
Yeah.
And that in itself is an art.
Yeah. I mean, I think to me it's, so here's another universal, right? Because we're all musicians, right? Mm-hmm. If you think about the brain and to link it to research, right? So the easiest way to induce a mood in a research lab is music.
Sure.
Right? And we don't know when the first sound was, but we know that music is the most evocative thing for humans.
In terms of generating or bringing us back to a time and a place, et cetera. I think the only sense that I've heard can compete with that is really smell.
Yeah.
You can smell something and all of a sudden it'll take you back to, you know, whether it was great grandma, grandpa, whatever.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And if you think about the first sounds that we all heard was probably our mother's heartbeat.
Sure.
And the rhythms of the mother.
So the drum beat of the rhythm
of
the heart. Yes.
Right. Yeah. And I think there's something really magical about music. And it is that kind of universal language.
Right.
So,
right.
I can't remember the earliest. I've always been involved in music and dance, and then lost it for a long time. And so, just really, again, coming back to Franklin, had these revelations of like, why did I give this up for so long?
Mm.
And then when it came back really strongly.
Right.
I just started getting very active again and with the drums and drum circles. And, you know, I had a lot of experience with, you know, master drummers and got kind of adopted into these communities where, you know, you learn the rhythm and then you also learn the song and you learn the dance. And that came back and then, you know, got involved with Remo drums and started actually doing some of the drum circles, what we call rhythm intervention at the senior center as well.
And that seems to be kind of a cross between music and certainly some of the brain body stuff as well, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's almost the perfect intervention, right? Especially for someone with mild cognitive impairment, because then you get the respiration, you get the contralateral movement, you get the social aspect, which is critical, right? We are social animals. You have to have that.
We started that way, eons ago. And social media just kind of deviates from that.
Oh, I know. I don't know the evidence of this, but it does concern me that the lack of in-person, I do feel like there's something very brain-based about being together in person.
Right.
I don't know what the evidence is showing about that yet, but I feel like there's something there that being in person is very different.
I would agree in my, you know, use case of one, even from a work environment with multiple years of work, et cetera, it was always good to be with the people, especially initially, to build a relationship, et cetera.
Yeah.
And then the last company I was with, they made a determination, which I think was fair at the time. We were in an international support role, so we had calls either early in the morning or late at evening with Asia, which is like 12, 13 hours difference.
Right.
So we could work remotely, which made sense. So we were in advance of COVID in that sense. Mm. We chose to do so. But within a couple of weeks, we also chose that we're going to work from work on Wednesdays. We all realized we still needed to have that face-to-face time. So it was our choice to come back together on a weekday. And generally all of us were there and we still had kind of the best of both.
Yeah.
And clearly that also prepared me. So when COVID did hit, I had retired just before that. It ended up interviewing, it was 19 of the 21 candidates for our local election. I maybe could have done half of those if I was still working.
Oh.
And then COVID hit. So I was already prepared to do the remote Zooms because I was technically adept. I already had group that was work. It was okay.
Right.
But then I also got hurt to the extent that, you know, I was retiring to get to go to meetings and meet people.
Right.
And then I couldn't. Oops.
Yeah.
So fortunately, it didn't last this forever, you know, but so now I'm having fun because, yeah, we're meeting different people and covering a variety of topics.
Sure.
Sharing, hopefully, good info that people will say, oh, yeah, that was good. I want to go find out more about Kimberly.
Yeah, no, there's something there for sure.
So music, jazz in particular, brain knowledge, drum circles, your teaching.
Yes. So, yeah. And, you know, the teaching is, I love the teaching. It's, you know, I'm teaching at William James College, and we're mostly doctoral students. And so they're already kind of out in the world, and it's leadership psychology.
Okay.
And so my piece is largely the neuroscience of leadership psychology. And so we just give them this framework of thinking about what's happening in the brain when you're working in systems, which is a different way of thinking about how people work.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have, you know, negative interactions, or you have, you know, people are gossiping, or people are excluding others,
mm-hmm.
or there are status dynamics, or there are, you know, you have, you know, the boss that isn't present, or so we think about that through, all right, what's happening in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you go in and make communication better with the brain in mind?
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So we don't give them, it's not a neuroscience degree, but we give them enough so that they understand the neuroendocrine system, so they understand the dopamine reward system, mm-hmm. right? How they understand what's happening in terms of oxytocin. So great leaders, for example, will induce oxytocin in others.
Right, not just through a drug, but just through words and interaction, personality,
yeah.
et cetera. Yeah.
They build rapport quickly. Mm-hmm. They make others feel psychologically safe. And I think great leaders are more vulnerable, they're willing to be authentic.
Yeah, they expose themselves.
Yeah.
Maybe not, you know, in terms of levels of kimono, so to speak, but
right.
at least to some sense.
Yeah.
They're vulnerable.
Yeah, they're trustworthy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so, yeah, we give them kind of the basics of neuroendocrine, the basics of vagal, do you know the vagal tones? So this is like the parasympathetic, the vagus nerve, which is loaded with oxytocin, and this is mm-hmm. this is associated with social competence,
okay,
being at ease with people who might be different from you, or you perceive them as different. So,
right. So
it's just you know these people who are just like really relaxed in every social mm-hmm. environment, right? Yep.
They're comfortable within their own skin,
yeah,
to
very
begin
much.
With,
yeah. And then you have other folks that are more maybe threat-oriented, and they're just, a little more guarded. And so we just think about navigating, you know, I think people are drawn to being therapists and kind of helping one person.
Mm-hmm.
And then leaders are more, they think about the whole system.
Right.
Right? So this training is thinking about systems, right? So you have this dysfunctional, it doesn't even have to be dysfunctional, but how do we make it even healthier?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, and I just adore these students. They are the loveliest humans. They want to help people.
Mm-hmm.
It makes my job easy.
That's good.
to support them.
If somebody wants to learn, that's half the job.
Yeah. They're engaged. They're bright, you know, and they're not checked out. Like I think, they're very engaged.
Yeah. I've seen that from time to time without naming names, but certain people, you know, at some point in time in a role, they just, you know.
Yeah.
They tried, they gave it their all, and it's just not working, and they're just biding their time until, you know, either the election, their term is over,
yeah.
or
Yeah.
Or they're just until they find a place that they can jump to something else in the corporate world. So,
of course. Yeah. And it happens. I mean, I feel
it's,
very
it, to a
grateful.
Certain extent, it's really human nature.
Sure.
You need to be aware that, oh, by the way, it is happening, so you can take the action to go, as opposed to just being in this, quote, kind of dead end, and you're becoming more and more dead, which is not good.
Right, right. Yeah.
Because then there's kind of the overlap of circles. You've got your small circle of influence, right? You immediate family, friends, etc. But then the circles expand beyond that, and you don't want to be kind of the pig pen character, right?
Right.
you just kind of spread this dirt dust all over the place wherever you go, and people who would, you know, shy away when you start approaching.
yeah. No, it's. I feel very, very grateful, you know, and fantastic colleagues, you know. So it's all positive, which is, you know, I think rare, and I'm very grateful to. I feel fed, therefore I can feed my students.
Mm-hmm.
So that's.
Well, and I think that's some of what you're teaching, at least in terms of the brain sessions that I've been as well, that we need to be mindful. And certainly as an example, when you get onto the plane, they always say, put your life stuff on before you help somebody
else. Right,
because
right.
if you haven't taken care of yourself, then at some point in time, you really can't help that next person.
Right. Yeah.
So there needs to be that kind of balance. And for each person, the balance is going to be different as to what they do. And you do gardening, you've got music, you've got a few things in there that you can use for your balance items.
Yeah.
Anywhere else you want to go with this?
Well, I got a Grammy ballot last year.
You got a what?
Yeah, I mean, nothing happened after it, but it was really amazing to get, I got a ballot, which means, I mean, I was up against, like, whatever, Taylor Swift and Sabrina Carpenter. But no, I got a, I mean, I've always been a songwriter, and that was another thing that just started coming back into my life again.
Sure.
Although I got too busy with work to continue to follow it up. I do want to get back to that. But this was a song I wrote a long time ago, and I just kind of revamped it and
mm-hmm.
reworked it, and I got a Grammy ballot.
Wow.
Yeah, 2025.
Congratulations.
So, thank you. Yeah, that was really, and then we had a Grammy for Your Consideration party. So just, you know, saw my name on the invite was really nice.
In the highlights.
Yeah. So we had a party, in Rhode Island, and yeah, so that's been really fun. And it just made me take it a little more seriously, I think.
Cause it, as a writer, and that's one of clearly I write to report, but then writing is also part of my outlet. I do some poetry,
help
me make some sense of stuff that's
right,
going on.
Right.
And that I think, to the extent that you've recognized you don't have enough time to do that, but you want to do the time. That's
yes.
the key for me. If I don't have enough time, it just doesn't happen.
You need to be
creating the space for it to just come.
Yeah.
is what'll happen. But
yeah.
if you don't create the space.
So these are my goals, right? So I'm even with gigs, I'm doing all covers, which
mm-hmm.
I love. I mean, I
right.
love the American Songbook, and I'm starting to branch out and do like some Stevie Wonder and some Chaka Khan,
mm-hmm.
which I love. I love doing them because I do it still with this sort of mellow vibe. So people are like, "What is that? Stevie Wonder? Is that or is she singing Creep? What?"
And that's where, to a certain extent, a lot of the quote artists, while they've been, quote, pigeonholed in one genre, if you will, they're not really pigeonholed, right?
Right, right. No, I love doing those kinds of songs. I just love when people are just like, what? Wait. So, but I do, one of my goals this year is to start adding some of the originals, which is really really vulnerable. So, that's one of my goals, is just do it. Just can't really do it. And maybe nobody will be listening. I don't know.
I'm sure they're listening. They may not have really started paying attention until, wait a minute, what did she do? Was that hers?
Unless I announce it. Maybe I won't announce it. I'll just sneak it in maybe a few times. And
for the trivia question.
I do have a Name That Tune when I do a Blondie as a swing. People are like, what? It's a Latin swing. And they're like, wait a minute.
You know? Why not?
Yeah. It's fun to, like, mix up those kinds of songs.
Yeah, because, you know, it's music, and as we talked, it's kind of an original expression going back into our early histories as humans, and clearly vocal words, etc. But music is still there.
Yeah.
And I know even at the Senior Center, they do the...
Memory Cafe.
Memory Cafe.
Perfect.
And that is
right?
Just, you know, it's astounding, because even my father-in-law, he could never remember what he had for breakfast, but put a Sinatra song on,
right?
And he knew every single word. It just came back.
Yes. That's the perfect Memory Cafe.
Yeah.
And it would be for anybody.
Right.
Right. Similar to the olfaction that you were talking about. Mm-hmm. Like so do you know the Sundance movie Alive Inside?
Alive Inside. I don't think
it's from a while ago, but it has this thing where there's, you know, these folks are, you know, they look like they're not alive at all.
Okay.
They're just kind of living the
comatose,
rest of their lives.
Whatever.
Yeah, and they put the cans on as your headphones, as you would say.
Yep.
And they literally get up and they start singing the blues, and it's the music. It's the music.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
But I really think that music is magic. Like, there's definitely something, and I don't know if it's with the singing. I mean, singing is also, it's like, I feel like it's a meditation, and I know that physiologically it's breathing for 2 or 3 hours.
Well, and even on meditations, you kind of have a repetitive phrase, and in songs, you've got the chorus, which is a repetitive phrase, there are aspects of that.
Absolutely, and you're, it's definitely a dopamine, which is like the reward center.
Mm-hmm, sure.
But the respiration, I do feel like I get a little like spacey after 3 hours of singing. Sometimes people want me to sing for 4 hours, and I'm like, I don't think I can drive home after 4 hours of singing. I feel like I would just be like, ooh.
Give me a ride.
Yeah, give me an Uber. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those, you know, we just had a talk on awe experiences in the brain. Were you there for that one?
I was at one of your recent ones. I don't know if it was the most recent.
So we talked about awe, because awe is this interesting brain experience, and it can be a religious experience for some folks that are religious, right? And awe and flourishing, which are very distinct human experiences, right? Most of the time, they are experienced by them when you're alone.
Right.
And I feel like music can be one of those awe experiences.
Mm-hmm.
When you and it's this sense, and it's brain-based, but it doesn't have to be. It's a sense of when you feel connected to everything.
Sure.
And it's one of these things where there's this default mode network in the brain, and which is self-referential, meaning it's this network where we think about ourselves, and not in a bad way, but where we think, we daydream, we see ourselves doing what we're going to do next. We might be goal-oriented, might be mind-wandering. Mm-hmm. So these are good things to do, right? They're good to do, because we have to, just like sports, right? You have to see yourself doing the thing.
Clearly, and as a former coach,
right?
If I had a high jumper and they could not visualize going over the bar, guess what? They never did.
Exactly.
They
you
never
have
did.
To. You have, and that's like, that's sports coaching. You have to see yourself doing it. So with awe experiences, that network quiets down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's less thinking about the self, and it's more this feeling of connection to, and it's not a bad loss of self.
No.
It's more like, oh, I don't have any problems.
I think of a time when, back in my running days, you know, you're out on a trail, and then all of a sudden it starts raining. So you're truly, wet and one with the world.
Right.
You're still aware of yourself because you're running through the trail, et cetera, but you're not you to that extent. You're the body running through the trail.
Right.
Being aware of not tripping and falling, but enjoying the weather and the rain, and just, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You're only wet once.
And there's something about that level of letting go of ego
that is really good for the brain. Right. It's just really good. And those things are associated with overall well-being and overall, like, better health and life satisfaction. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's this, the Center for Greater Good, which is Dr. Keltner and UC Berkeley, and they study this stuff. So they study, how do we create these experiences? It's not that hard, apparently.
No.
You know, once you understand, like, what is the milieu?
What are the components?
Right?
How do you set it up?
Yeah. It's like that. It could be running in the rain, okay? And some people, it's easier to get into those spaces. This is why some people, it's easier to meditate because they're just, you know, they get into this. Some people, it's the gong on the, you know, in the meditation bowl or something. But, but I think singing is that for me. I get that pretty easily.
Yeah.
Get to that space where I'm like, oh. You know, I think artists feel that way, too. Like, it's more this, like, something is coming. And I feel that way when I'm writing songs, too. It's like, okay,
right.
Own
you,
this.
You get into the flow, to
yes.
pick up another term, which may be related to flourish, but at least
yeah.
in terms of that, you have to have done the work, whether it's 10,000 hours or more.
Right.
You have to have done the work in order to, it just becomes, and you're with the flow, as opposed
to,
you know, the extreme. If you stopped and tried to think about how you're going to take a step, you would never take a step because there's just too much involved.
Right.
But if you just, you're in it, it just,
yeah.
it happens.
Well said. You know, Csikszentmihalyi, the book Flow?
I've read the book.
Okay.
Yes.
So that's they've done it before, so.
Yep.
Or The Art of Practice. I can't remember the author, but it's that.
Right.
Who is the art, which is about music. It's just,
yeah, and then they've referenced that, you know, the Beatles spent many years doing their nightclubs, and
right.
the Stones apparently went to Germany and spent many years doing that 10,000 hours, whether it was exactly not, but it was that concept of working it down so that, you know, as a musician specifically, you know, you've got to be together.
Yeah.
And then whether it's 3, 4, 5 become one, right?
Right, yeah.
Otherwise, the sound is just not there.
Yeah, and flourishing is interesting. Flourishing is more of a positive psychology term.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's different from awe, because I think flourishing is more the idea of like, it's more of a human term, like flourishing, like you're cognizant about doing well.
Right.
Where awe, I think, is you lose the cognizance.
Oh, so that you're more one. You lose that separation, but you're still together, but you're more conscious of it. And it's somewhat of kind of a self-feeding policy thing?
I think so.
The more you do what you do and get satisfaction, then the more it comes along.
Yeah. Although humans have this weird thing where we have to keep growing. Right,
yes.
So well, we get
a forward motion.
Right,
yes.
Yeah. So people who, it's like Maslow, and if you get to a certain level where you're very satisfied,
mm-hmm.
our set point changes. Right, so you have to go.
You kind of go up. It was kind of runner training. So you'd go, you'd reach a plateau, and then you would have to exercise at another level to get to that next level.
Right.
So yeah.
Yeah. Growth mindset. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Out for the journey, not the destination.
Right. Which is a hard thing to keep in mind, though, right?
The journey's a lot of fun, usually.
Yeah, if you can keep that in mind.
I understand.
Journey.
Unfortunately, the media highlights those that, they got the gold medal, they went to Disney.
Right.
Then they fall apart.
Right.
Because they don't know what to do next.
So, interestingly, we had our inaugural TEDx at William James College last year, and we had 9 speakers, our students and alumni, and it was this huge, iconic thing for them, you know, and it was wonderful, it was, you know, celebrations. And then afterwards, there was a little bit of a letdown, like, we did this huge thing, and it was like, okay, now what? Right?
Next?
Isn't that interesting? It was like, well, yeah, now you still have to, you know, go, you know,
mm-hmm.
meet people and still talk about your talk and get people to watch it. And,
right.
And I just thought that was so interesting. You know, it's like, no, you're not done.
No.
You're not done. Now you got to go.
In many ways, this is the start. And that's where even in an education space, you know, commencement is associated with the ending of something.
Right.
But commencement means the beginning.
Right. Yeah. Now that's liftoff.
You've got some educational training and experience, and now you're ready to take it, going back to what we talked about, to the next level. Now you're going out into, quote, the real world.
Right.
What are you going to do, whether it's art, music, business, finance, accounting, whatever?
Right, yeah.
Well, this has been fun.
Yeah, I think we've covered quite a bit.
And we can include in the show notes for people who want to listen to you other than at the farmer's market. I know you're on that schedule, and you have some other schedules from time to time because I manage the community calendar, so I get to see those from time to time.
Yeah.
And if they want to, you know, follow the music, certainly the Senior Center, your schedule for the next Mind or Brain Talk, Drum Circle.
Yep.
There's plenty of places that can catch you.
Yeah. And I'm doing the certificate. I'm doing the Neuroscience of Leadership Certificate.
Okay.
So that's for HR coaches, if they want to just do brain basics, 6 weeks. That'll be through William James College, so I'll send you that link.
Okay.
So they don't need to do a whole doctorate program. They could do, you know, 6 weeks, just learn those brain basics so they could coach their clients, get those basics.
At least get the help to do something. And then if they really get bitten by it, then...
They will.
Take the dive and get that whatever that next level is.
Doctorate.
Doctorate. Good.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you for taking time to do this.
My pleasure.
This has been fun.
Thank you. Thank you for, you know, reaching out and coming to the Senior Center. And yeah, that was fun when we saw each other. Like, wait, are you? Wait,
yes, I'm the guy. I don't do much public stuff, but yeah, the word gets out there. At least oral word gets out there.
Yes, it does.
Yes. Well, thank you again. And to
my
listeners,
pleasure.
Thank you for listening. Hopefully you've enjoyed this. And we do this again as a quick reminder because Franklin matters. We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.